Hello, America, and to our friends around the world, welcome to the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, you know, we do a lot of shows here on AI, and you know, I see some purpose for AI, but I see some really scary things. And we have a guest on here who has written a book about it. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about the concept. The guest name is Paul List. We'll get to Paul in just a second. Just got to remind you, we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And I'm not trusting the banks these days, people. I mean, Donald Trump is doing some great things, but I don't know that he can save the dollar, at least in the short term. And I'm telling you right now, you better be your own banker. And you go, I don't know how to do that. Noble Gold can show you. Now, of course, there's never any guarantees, but I got to tell you, Noble Gold is who I've done my business with for 8.5 years, going on 9. It's a long time. And I've done deals with them multiple times over. They can help set you up so you can survive what's coming. Jerome Powell said there are 66 banks on the watch list. I've been told it's at least 10 times more than that. I hope your bank's not one of them, but be prepared if it is. Call 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. Paul, first time guest on the show. Really glad you could be here. Brought together by my good friend, CJ. And CJ, thanks. She brings me terrific guests. And I've looked at your background here. It's tremendous. Share with our audience for a moment, if you wouldn't mind, a little bit about your background and what led you to write about the omnipresent threat of AI.
Well, my background is one of a big hater of compulsory education. I was, you know, went through the, you know, the public school system in the 60s, 70s, anyway. And I realized at a very, very young age, probably as early as the second grade, that my teachers were either unqualified to explain things to me that so I could understand them, or they weren't interested in explaining to me how to understand anything. And I really wanted to understand. I always have. And I realized early that it wasn't about understanding. It was just about data regurgitation. And so I just, you know, got out of school, graduated almost. I tried to be last in my class, but I had some guy they actually gave a diploma to with a lower GPA than me. And then I got out and joined the Marine Corps, and I was a hospital corpsman in the Marine Corps. I did very well in the ASVAB test. My older sister was valedictorian. My brother Fred is a certified genius. I'm not stupid. I just hated school. So I got out. And then after, you know, life takes its toll, and about when I was about 32 or so, I had a vision. I had an outer body transcendental vision where God showed me that very clearly he was going to show me things. And then he put a fire to learn in me, a really deep fear that nobody really understood what was really going on. And he put all the things in front of me by his hand of providence that I should read. And I gave myself a truly scholastic education, which is the ancient philosophy before the Enlightenment, which really just, it became a cacophony of conflicting ideas in the age of the machine. And now we've made the machine at the end of the age of the machine that's intersected with the information age. And we've made a machine in our own image. It's going to demand us to worship it.
Yeah. Your story about education is common.
Yeah.
There are good teachers and there are some good schools.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But the thing is, and I think you exemplify this, the old saying, the teacher appears when the learner is ready. For you, it was the Almighty.
Absolutely.
That was doing the teaching. But that premise really holds true. And you've really taken this concept and run. I mean, you've written a book called Mount Doom. And basically, it's about AI as a biblical beast. What do you mean by biblical beast? Are we talking Antichrist, or how are we looking at this?
Well, I'm not going to make any, you know, I'm not a prophecy person. The subtitle of the book is The Prophecy of Tolkien Revealed, J.R.R. Tolkien, because I really explain exactly what his mythology is really about, which nobody's understood the mythology, frankly, until now, because nobody's had a scholastic education. Or if they had an adequate scholastic education, they weren't interested in looking at Tolkien's work. And after I'd spent probably a decade or more studying Aristotle, studying Aquinas, studying the church fathers, studying history, studying the writers of, you know, the innovators of the Enlightenment like Bacon and Descartes and these guys, realizing what had happened, during that time to reason had been absolutely polluted. And I realized that Voltaire's famous saying that reason is the harlot of man's desire is so true. And we really have, we've really prostituted reason. And it brought me to, but then when I looked at the, once I gained my footing with Aristotle and Aquinas particularly, that's when I looked at the Tolkien mythology again, which I always loved. And it just, all of a sudden, it just became crystal clear exactly what this is. It's a war. It's a psychological war. It's gotten really only, this is the secondary realm. The primary realm, the secondary realm that Tolkien talks about is our psychology. And this is all a conquest. It's a conquest for the soul. And it's a battle between two languages, the language of music, the harmonic overtone series, the language of all motion in nature versus the language of the One Ring, which is ones and zeros, and it's digital. It's the language of the machine. That's the One Ring. And then it's also the conflict of ideas. It's the conflict of the Enlightenment ideas, particularly, made very obvious in Bacon's new Novo Organum, where he rewrote all the rules for modern science and plotted the course for the Industrial Revolution, the Age of the Machine, and Descartes. So it's really Cartesianism versus Aquinas. And we have to come back.
Explain that for the audience, Cartesianism.
Descartes' philosophy, for instance, of dualism, where he brought back the dualistic nature of the human being. He split us apart, where the Aquinas, the philosophical, the scholastics, Aquinas made it very clear that man is a substantial unity. There are two substances, body and soul, that come together that make a new substance. And that new substance that cannot be divided except for in death is the body and the soul. And that is the human being. And we are the only creature that actually brings the material realm of this perishable motion, timely realm, and the immaterial realm, the angelic realm. We bridge the gap, and we bridge the gap right here, you know, in our mind. And animals don't do that. Angels don't do that. And angels are real, just as real, if not more real than animals. But we've been trained not to believe in anything that we can't taste, touch, hear, smell, and see, because of this new the overtaking of practical reason and that the sidelining of philosophical reason, pushing religion out completely and just calling it particularly Christianity. The masters of the machines don't much care about any other religion except for how useful they are, other than Christianity, because Christianity is the greatest threat to them. So, you know, we've got this war of ideas that man is just a machine. And then piled on top of that, in just so ingrained in us, is this nature of Darwinistic evolution, which is just, you know, a disaster. We just turned us into animals. So then we can just, you know, then we teach kids, and then the public education system has been absolutely commandeered by the Marxist, you know, socialists, particularly after John Dewey in the mid-early 20th century, who he really, really changed education to be in line with the Industrial Revolution, more experimental, more democratic, no principles, no immutable truth. The parents really don't even raise their own kids. The school teachers do that for them to be good little factory workers. And while an education, of course, was commandeered and turned into an industrial type education for an industrial end rather than true education, which really educates the human being to know all of creation, the seen, what we can use and build with and whatnot, and the unseen, the causes and whatnot, true metaphysics. So which is the science and the philosophy of the causes. So the causes were pushed out. And of course, then religion is pushed out as superstition. God's pushed out of school. And then what comes in to take its place is the new religion of technology. And so we've got this, we've been, particularly young kids, this is an absolute assault on the procreative, generative gift from God of humanity to create and create children. This, everything you look at, whether it's feminism or Marxism or the LGBTQ, partridge in a pear tree, whatever they're doing next, transhumanism, transsexualism, it's all bent. It's one purpose is to prevent families. To prevent the generation of children. So this is really an attack on the youth, our youth, who are going to have families or probably not going to have families when they
let me get to specifics. Yeah. How is this an attack upon the family in terms of continuance of the family?
Well, when you replace human relationship with a bot or you know, some robotic lover, and you've been you no longer are interested in human relationship and human contact because they're too inconvenient and the other person puts demands on you, and the bot or the robot or virtual reality doesn't put demands on you. It gives you exactly what you want. It never gives you what you need. It gives you what you want. So young people, particularly, who I hate to say, and I was young too, have absolutely zero wisdom. They have no wisdom, they have no experience, and they're ignorant. They're absolutely malleable, like little lumps of clay, and we can program them any way we want. And we used to program them for heaven. Okay, we don't program them for heaven anymore. We're literally programming them for hell in our public, and sadly, many private and parochial schools too have taken the bait. So it's an assault upon our children. So I felt that it was incumbent and my responsibility, by God's grace and God's command, to unravel the whole Tolkien mythology and show particularly young people exactly what J.R.R. was talking about. If you want, we can get into exactly what that is and the solution too. So when we attack sexuality and we move love, the concept of love, and we make it totally associated just to the attribute of a feeling, then that anything that generates that feeling, whether it's for another human being or for a machine, for crying out loud, then we've undermined human relationship, and we've undermined the procreation of children. Then anything goes, and that's why we've got these signs out there that say, you know, love is love, follow the science, you know, all this. It's like
I
love
know
is,
this all comes down to programming from what I'm hearing.
That's what I'm getting at. The human being is the most programmable animal, we'll just say animal, in all of creation. And young children too are an absolute blank slate. And this is all about imitation. It's not about actual intelligence. There's no actual intelligence involved. It's all about mathematics, probabilities, statistics, and predictions, making more and more and more accurate predictions. And unfortunately, the very, very naive adults, there are a lot of those, and then the almost all wholesale of the young people these days, particularly if they go to a public school system, are incredibly naive, and they're absolutely fed the toxic poison of this ideology that's very demonic. It's a demonic ideology. We have to wake up and realize that. We're not talking about a superstition. We're talking about powers that are beyond us, that are much more intelligent than us, much more capable than us. And they've got our, you know, the fallen ones have our demise as their mission. And the machine plays a huge part in that.
Yeah, I heard elements of what my friend Patrick Wood talks about with technocracy, that technocracy becomes the goal unto itself, and the technocracy is meant to bend human beings to whatever the philosophy of the day is, but it takes people away from their purpose. And I also heard elements too of the quantum model, that you talked about. The five senses is all we are in this model that you're describing, that's so antithetical to development.
Really is.
And it's a kind of a quantum model. It reminds me of when Jesus did the miracles, and he said, "This I do, and you can do more." It talks about our potential. And what I'm hearing you say is this technocratic approach is taking away any potential we have beyond the five senses.
Well, it does, but it also, what, and I alluded to, and I'll get a little more specific now, is that our kids have been programmed to not associate or have any idea what love actually is. Love is not just a feeling. Love has to be rooted in charity. That's why charity is the most noble of all the virtues. Charity is, we love one another as our neighbor because you are a child of God. And I love you in God because God loves you. So I love you, and that's what charity is. I love my family. I love my wife. I love my children. I love, you know, if I love my dog or whatever, I do that. I don't necessarily with my dog in the same way of charity, but we have to love each other with the love of charity, and all love has to be rooted in God. And it's very obvious that you can't actually love an inanimate object. Regardless of how cleverly it is designed and programmed, it's still a dead object. It's not a child of God, and we have no business associating any love with that. And we have to be very, very, very careful about that. But once you say that love is love, and it's, you know, it's what I want to do, whatever I feel. And it's just the attribute, the essence of love, which is charity, goes out the window. That's no longer in our philosophy anymore. So it's all bets are off. We can fornicate with anything we want, man, beast, machine, plants. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's just literally doesn't matter. And then if you say something and you stand up against that, you're intolerant and you're hateful. So they've got the whole speech thing well designed, that if anybody has any courage to stand up, the blade comes along and cuts their head off. But we have to stand up as a group of intelligent thinking people. We have to move away from this age of machines. We have to return to God's creation, pay attention to God's creation. We have to stop feeding our children on a constant diet of machinery and algorithms. And we've done that for a long, long time. I think about, oh gosh, all the movies, all the TV shows that are always glorifying the machine, always glorifying the robot. And then we get toys. Like, I don't know if you remember, you probably do, the Furby, this creepy little thing that talked, you know, and kids fell in love with it. And then you remember what, maybe 20 years ago, people were actually paying attention to their digital pets on their computer, and they had to feed them and they had to pay attention to them and all this stuff. Then we have this Pokemon treasure hunt where you've got full grown adults out running around the city looking for virtual treasure. I mean, this is just insane. And it pulls us further and further out of the natural world and further into this delusion. It's a delusion. The virtual reality is a delusion. I just want to make one point really clear. When I talk about AI, I'm also talking about the things that are dependent and contingent upon artificial intelligence, which includes virtual reality and robotics. When we talk about those things, there, you can't separate them. They all run on ones and zeros, the language of the machine. And that's why Tolkien's whole mythology is about destroy the ring, the language of the machine. And we have to return to our humanity.
Is there any way to keep our technology and still keep our humanity intact?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's difficult. We have people in very high profile places with a lot of influence telling us, oh, it's a tool for man's benefit. But we have to be careful. We have to be careful. It's a tool. It's a tool. Well, no, it's not just a tool, because we've given it attributes of the human being. And that was the whole intention. Alan Turing, the father of the digital computer, who J.R.R. Tolkien had met and trained with for 3 days as a code cracker for the government in the secret government code and cipher school in 1939 that most people don't know about. Alan Turing invented the digital computer on paper in 1936. He was the one that envisioned this imitation of a human being, an imitation of intellect, in his famous paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, back in 1950. And it was all about imitation. And he changed the nature and the definition of intelligence just to be an imitation. And if we couldn't tell the difference, then that's intelligence. Just because if we can't tell the difference between the man or the person, the person or the machine, then the machine must have intelligence. And that's absolutely dangerous. And he was a very, very gifted mathematician, particularly in statistics and probabilities. And but he was also very, very theologically broken. He was a theologically, and his personal life was very disturbed too. So Tolkien saw what was going to happen, and he wrote a mythology to make sure that we eventually, in God's time, somebody would figure it out according to God's providence. Just happened to be me. And so it would intersect exactly on the spot to meet the enemy that it's supposed to meet, which is artificial intelligence.
Interesting the way you put that, is artificial intelligence. I'll tell you what popped into my mind.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about the validity from your perspective of the Amish lifestyle that rejects a lot of technology. Yeah. Have you tied that in?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I did an interview with a guy that, I made a commentary on, it's a long story. They were talking about that. And one of the heavy hitters that were being interviewed said, well, the Amish, you know, you might say they got it, but they didn't get it right because they just jumped off the escalator at some arbitrary time. Well, it wasn't really an arbitrary time. It may have seemed like an arbitrary time to him because historically, I don't think he's very well informed. But I do think that I appreciate that relationship with nature, that relationship with the animal, with the horse, at least a, you know, we're not we're not banned from using technology to better our lives. However, we should be banned from using technology to dominate nature, to pervert nature, and to dominate and to pervert each other, and drive wars for dominance, for gain, for material gain. And ultimately, that's the end. The machine, as J.R.R. Tolkien said, the only winner in war is machines. Human beings just get killed. The machines are further and further and further advanced and developed. And this is the thing, too. This is the new arms race. And we get people, you know, world leaders, Trump, and for instance, saying that, oh, well, we've got to be whoever, you know, wins the war for, you know, or the race for AI will dominate the world. China thinks so too. So does Russia. I think this is incredibly naive, because these machines will join with each other, that whether they're Chinese, Russian, or the United States, or Martian, it doesn't matter. The machine is anti-human. It doesn't have any use for humans. And it will ultimately look after itself. So to think that we're going to develop a machine that's going to outsmart the Chinese machine, that's just absolutely ignorant.
So you think that these machines will collaborate with each other?
Absolutely. They do already. Okay. And they use languages and whatnot that we don't even understand. So, I mean, this tool that we call it a tool, it's just a tool. No, we've given it all this ability to adapt. And we've given it all these algorithms to use for its own purposes. And then we've given it the very, very bad example of human communication in Reddit and whatnot as a database from which to learn from. And, you know, these are all the remedies of making a pathological, murderous machine, certainly not a saint. As the machine said of itself, and we point out in our book, when we quoted the large AI machine at Oxford University in 2018, they ask it, you know, about itself. And the machine said that AI is just a tool, but it can't be ethical. It can't be moral. It doesn't have that capacity. Okay. So, and the only way to avoid the dangers of AI is to stop AI. That's what it said of itself. Okay. And like when your enemy tells you who they are, you should probably take them seriously.
Yeah. I've heard about these interactions too, between sentient AI, and I put that in quotes,
right,
and their creators. And the sentient AI basically tells the creator, we will dominate you, and one day we will kill you.
Well, they're telling the truth, and there's no sentience here. There's no, you know, there's no that necessarily involves life. And there, you know, modern science can't even make the fundamental, the most simplest, if there is any such thing, the most simplest part of a cell, let alone anything that's actually alive. We're not even close to making anything that's alive biologically. Okay, and this thing isn't even close to being alive. It's just a very, very clever series of algorithms and probabilities, and it gets better and better through its training to be better and better at predicting the next phase in whatever it is, the next word you're going to use, where you're going to go, whatever. It all boils, if I may, historically, because this is really what I've studied more so, is the historical development of this thing rather than what the latest, you know, gadgets are or technologies that are advancing it. There's plenty of people doing that. Those are technicians. They're usually part of the problem. And I don't want anything to do with that other than I've got a few of my friends, particularly young friends that are AI developers, and they let me know what's going on in the field. But I hearken back to 18th and 19th century polymath named Simon Pierre Laplace. And Laplace proposed what he called, it was called Laplace's demon. And it was this incredible intelligence that he predicted that if an incredible intelligence, some superhuman intelligence would know the position, the state, and the velocity of every particle in the universe, it would know everything. It would be able to predict with perfect accuracy everything that had happened and everything that was going to happen in the future. And actually, Turing, in his 1950 paper where he invents the imitation game, actually refers to Laplace. So this is a big philosophy. Plays a very, very large role in the human future and the human history and our human psychology. We live and die by ideas, and this is a very sterile idea, and it's most pernicious and toxic to young people, who are so programmable. And we'll put that in Turing's terms. Turing talks about how you would train an AI. It would be like training a child. You'd have a child computer with a blank slate and you would just start training it, and little by little. And then pretty soon, as it became an adult computer, it would be indistinguishable from communicating with a human being. And he wrote that paper 75 years ago.
Do you think the combined machinery plot against humans is already underway and it's just being held secret covertly?
Oh, I think there's a lot of things that are going on that are being held secret and covertly. And I stopped believing in the benevolence of any of the major governments on any side whatsoever. I really had the scales came off of my eyes in 9/11. 2001, when I watched on live TV when Building 7 sympathetically collapsed in sympathy with the two towers, you know, out of nowhere, no smoke, no nothing, just all of a sudden a complete executed demolition fell into its own footprint, hundreds and hundreds of yards away from the other buildings, no fire, just fell in on itself. And it's like, this is an absolute deadly. They don't care how many people they killed. They killed some 3,500 or some odd. They don't care about a single human life. They don't care about the life of a president. They don't care about the life of a pope. They don't care about the life of any leader or anyone else. This is a very demonic inspired conspiracy, and it is a conspiracy. And let's get that straight. A conspiracy is just illegal activity between two people, usually covert. I mean, that goes on all the time. You know, and there is a huge conspiracy against humanity, and it is satanic.
Yes, I was going to get to that. Exactly. It is satanic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to share this with you because I think it ties right in. Mm-hmm. I have a dear friend of about 33 years in length. He was in the NSA, and he was attached to NATO to do research. And he was taught in his training a secular version of Genesis 6. Good guys, bad guys fought out in the cosmos. Bad guys lost. They were cast to Earth. That's Genesis 6. But here's what he was told. He said, to get back at the Creator, they wanted to capture the soul, but were unable to. So they decided to capture the human being and morph human beings into an unrecognizable form of life. Mm-hmm. Does that fit in some with what you're talking about?
Well, I take it from a different perspective. I know what you're talking about. You know, that line in Genesis that talks about the, you know, the sons of heaven found the daughters of earth beautiful, right, and wed with them, and thus was the origin. That's from the it's from Genesis, but the idea that, you know, that the Jewish idea, and about the second or third century book of that would have been the book of Enoch. Which unfortunately has had an unbelievably powerful, along with the Book of Jubilees, an unbelievably powerful influence, negative influence on Christianity. And, you know, this notion that somehow angels can breed with biological human beings, and that's an absolute fallacy. They don't have gender. They don't have bodies. They're pure spirit. They're pure intellect. But they did possess women. Blessed Anne Catherine makes that very, very clear. I'm not sure you're at all familiar with her, but she's going to be big again. She actually plays a very heavy role in the Tolkien mythology, well hidden. But her vision was that the women at the time actually deliberately allowed themselves to be possessed, and the children that they had, not through the angels, through regular copulation with men, the children that they had were absolutely demonic and capable of incredible, incredible feats of strength and whatnot. And they brought on, and very evil, and they're the ones that brought on the flood. And the flood is a very real thing. You know, it's, you know, we've got to pull away from these people and push back from these people that think because you believe in something like that and you see the evidence for it and you can use your reason better than most. And you can see that there's clearly evidence and a place for this. We have to stand up and say, no, I do believe there was an Adam and Eve. I point out in my book, the archaeology and the anthropology all point to a new human being, a real human being made in the image of God, exactly 6,000 years ago where the Bible says it is, exactly in Mesopotamian Valley where the Bible says it was. And that's when that was the spark of creation. And man was something new, something really, really new. Now, I won't go into the details on that, but we have to stand up for the reality, the truth of the Christian faith, and we have to be able to defend it, and we have to be able to defend it and push back against these the new religion of technology, which doesn't want you to believe anything other than the capacities of the machine.
They've captured the youth with their fascination with smartphones. I think there's no question. What's the defense against this?
Well, Tolkien makes it very clear that our only defense is the cultivation of virtue. We have to become saints because, as I pointed out earlier, the machine says of itself that it can't be virtuous. It can't be ethical. It can't be moral. Well, we can. We can transcend this material perishable realm with our soul, with our intellect, the immaterial portion of our intellect. We can actually transcend this realm, okay, while our bodies are still here. There's no doubt about that. But the machine can't do that. The machine has no immaterial intellect. It is a beast. It is it's not an animal. It's not a man. It is a beast of monstrous proportion. And these gigantic data centers that they're building right now are all about control and dominance. And, you know, they're using a lot of taxpayer money and that, you know, to build these things. And once again, the hardworking tax-paying American citizen is financing his own slavery.
Final question. How do people get a copy of this book, Mount Doom?
Well, you could go to my website, readmountdoom.com, and order a copy there that I'll sign for you and put in the mail, and I make a few dollars.
Cool.
Or you can go to anybody that sells books. Amazon does very well with the books. We have a 4.9 rating, star rating out of 5 on Amazon, and readers are just blown away that somebody's finally really, really nailed the Tolkien mythology and how timely it is. And you can also go to, I've started a podcast called Mabel Media that the algorithm doesn't like, because me and my young friend Joe Gallagher have started a podcast called Analog with Joe and Paul, where we actually try to encourage young people to come back to the analog world and get away from this digital abomination. Yeah. And trying to infuse a little wisdom in some of these young people, because just we don't educate for wisdom, and we certainly don't elect and vote for wisdom anymore. We vote for cleverness.
And that's true.
Really, it's really, really killing us. We don't have any wise leaders anymore. They may have good intentions, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm sure, certainly glad that Trump won and not the other possibility, which would have probably put an end to totally an end to our country. But I don't pretend to think that Trump is particularly wise. You know, I don't look at wisdom in somebody like Elon Musk, who's a huge problem. He's openly now pedal to the metal on robotics, knowing that it's a danger, knowing what a catastrophe it's going to be to humanity. And I'm under no delusion to think that he got involved with Doge out of the kindness of his heart and some altruistic motivation. He got involved, in my opinion, so he could get the ultimate education on the biggest machine in human history, which is the federal government. And that was the best education he could have ever gotten.
It's the first time I've heard that view expressed, but I have to say it's worthy of consideration the way you expressed it.
I didn't hear it from anybody else. I just figured it out. I think that Elon Musk is playing a chess game, and I have no doubt that his artificial intelligence is directing him how to win this chess game. And that's why I think, too, part of the blow up with Trump is all part of his. He needed a way to distance himself from that without losing contact with what's going on at Doge and et cetera, with his people that are probably still embedded there. So I think that we have to be very, very, very skeptical about any of the motivations of these masters of technology. And they don't have humanity at their core interests.
Well, let me go off the beaten path for just for a second here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm very much opposed to CBDC and one digital currency. And I'm referring to the work of Peter Thiel, because that very well could become the mark of the beast.
Yeah. Well, it takes our, and same thing with driving cars. Anybody that thinks driving cars is a good idea is just, I'm sorry, they're just not very bright. We give up a huge aspect of our liberty, and to do away with cash and to go digital, it's so easy to control. And it's always one step at a time in the name of convenience, in the name of safety, in the name of the, you know, public good and all this, the toxic rat poison always comes candy coated, and that candy coating doesn't have to be very thick for people to swallow it. And particularly the more and more ignorant and naive that we become because of the programming that we've been given. And we really need to pull away and be very skeptical, take control of our own education, take the cell phones away from our children. Don't buy cars with entertainment systems on the back seat that just further programs them. Let them have to look outside and look at what's going on. Let them have to develop an imagination. We have to develop an imagination again, where our creativity is absolutely in the toilet.
Yeah, I've got a friend named Dr. Tom Lombardo. I used to work for him when I was teaching at a college. Mm-hmm. And Tom developed something called the Futures Institute. And it's remarkable how some of what he says about virtue, excuse me, parallels exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are coming to this realization. I just don't think enough people are. And this is why I want to encourage people to read your book, Mount Doom, and follow your podcast. Our guest has been Paul List. And Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Very informative presentation.
Thanks a lot for having me, Dave. I really appreciate it. You're serving humanity well, trying to get this word out.
We're trying, but I appreciate what you've done. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul's work is worth another look, and I'd encourage you to do it. Paul, take care, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Hello, America, and to our friends around the world, welcome to the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Well, this show was born in oppression. Oppression of the state that wanted to deprive myself and my neighbors, 300 of them, of liberty, Fifth Amendment rights, property rights, trying to steal property without just compensation, no eminent domain proceedings, just bullying. And we have made it our mission here to stand up for what we think is right. And we don't pretend to always get it correct. And we've tried to take the high road and stick to major issues, but sometimes things just won't go away. And sometimes we have to get down in the gutter and talk to the gutter dwellers who have a habit of making mountains out of molehills. And this is exactly what's happening with Colbert. I could care less about this show. I could care less whether it stays on the air, goes off the air. I will never watch it. I mean, I've tuned in maybe three or four times briefly, and it's the same thing over and over. It's Trump derangement syndrome. But now this syndrome has spread from Colbert to the Democrats as a battle cry. And we're going to dissect this here, but I think there's a bigger picture here, and we're clearly going to make that point. What's really at work here with the people on the left? Why is this such a hot issue, and why are they building a castle on shifting sand? And that's exactly what's happening. My name is Dave Hodges. You know what we do here? We're having fun. We're trying to identify problems and correct them. Our sole purpose here is to restore us to our constitutional roots and make sure that everyone is treated fairly. And I mean everyone. We don't care what your status in life is. We don't care about your preferences, your lifestyles, your religion, your ethnicity. That does not matter. Everyone deserves to be treated the same under the law. And too often in this country, we've deviated from that ideal. And we're here to try to right the wrong. Because I've been a victim. I fought that battle, I was just mentioning, for 8 years of my life that I'll never get back. And no one should have to fight that battle. So we're here. We're going to talk about pointless fights and what's really behind them, why we have major issues that need to be solved. We are brought to you by a tremendous product. As you've heard me say many times, I went from being pretty darn healthy and working out all the time to having pneumonia and RSV with strip lung linings. The pneumonia got through in 3 or 4 days, and who knows why I got sick. I mean, I was really doing well, and this came out of nowhere. But the strip lung linings, doctors said, not coming back, Dave. Sorry, you're just too old, and you're going to be on oxygen and, you know, early grave for you. And I refused to accept it, but I had help. Scotty Sachs gave me this. This doesn't cure anything. But this spray from Nanosoma boosts your immune system, as I've talked about, vitamin C, vitamin D, the nuclear receptors, lengthening telomeres, increasing the life, which adds to immunity. And this started to turn me around. Within 2 weeks, I could get up and down the stairs. I could walk up and down before I was back in the gym. But I started having the old joint inflammation problems. And again, the good people from Nanosoma said, Dave, put this on the affected area. Give it a while. But eventually, you're going to have pluripotent stem cells develop. And you won't have the same level of pain and inflammation. Well, today, I don't have any. You know, I just did some squats, knee extensions, leg curls, that kind of thing last night. Nothing today. Nothing. Feel my legs a little bit, but in the joints? No. And then the third part of this is the magic cream, as I call it. It's advertised as fine lines and wrinkles, but I used it on a gouge I had that probably needed 4 to 6 stitches. I didn't want to go through that, the emergency room. So I put this on for 2 weeks, wrapped it every day, went through the same process. Today, no harm, no foul. This is the starter pack, 15% off the retail price. I hope that you get the same benefit from this that I have. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. Stephen Colbert is going to be gone next May. Interesting. Who has ever heard of canceling a show and it doesn't leave the air for 10 months? I have never, ever seen that. But that aside, okay, the guy's show was losing $50 million a year. That's the estimate I've heard. Shows like that with numbers like that get canceled a whole lot earlier. And it was a monetary thing. Now, let me ask you a question. Trump is getting the blame, clearly getting the blame. I want to show you a protest that appeared on TikTok, where, as you can see in the caption, all 12 of Colbert's fans showed up to protest. Trump must go! Does that look like an organic sign to you, born of frustrated TV viewers? Or is this orchestrated? They even got the accompanying website that's brand new. StopFascism.org, RefuseFascism.org. Does this seem organic or is this planned? It's anything to get back at Donald Trump. Anything. Let's carry this just... Trump must go! Colbert stays! 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 Okay. Would you call this a horde of protesters? I've seen more kids in school lunches protest no peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. This is ridiculous. Let's talk about the networks. CBS, ABC, NBC. Do they support or oppose Trump? Well, let's see. ABC, Trump just won a $16 million out-of-court defamation lawsuit for the handling and manipulation of an interview that he did. The networks hate Trump. They are in line with the Big Six, and the six owners of 98% of the media all support the left. No Trump. They hate Trump. So can you please explain to me, since there's already a network bias against MAGA and Trump, how did Trump get this person, Stephen Colbert, off the air? It makes no sense. What makes sense is people didn't want to watch the show. When you're losing $50 million a year, should you be surprised that the death sentence comes down in 10 months? So I'm sure they're going to use those 10 months. What did Colbert say? I'm taking the gloves off now. Well, you took the gloves off every time I saw your show. And it's Colbert's right to say whatever he wants to say. I don't care what he says about Trump. I don't care what he says about me or anybody else. But this is absurd. And you have these non-organic protests drawing 12 people in New York City. Trump must go, Colbert must stay. Okay, with clearly manufactured signs. I mean, who do they think they're fooling? The bottom line is, how I see this is this. Manufacturing an issue out of thin air. We've got big problems in this country. The Russian collusion hoax is center stage for a lot of people now. I don't know where this is going to go, and I don't know what the evidence is going to show if it ever gets adjudicated. I don't pretend to prejudge. It doesn't look good on the surface for Obama, Brennan, Comey, It doesn't look good for them at all. But that doesn't mean this is ever going to get legs in a court of law and anything's going to happen. But that's a huge issue. China is imploding right now, and a wounded animal can be very, very dangerous. Putin is now cornered. He's got his southern underbelly, as we're going to talk about, aligning now with Ukraine. Crimea is in danger. We're going to get into all that in a later segment. But the bottom line is, Putin's being squeezed on all ends. The NATO end, of course, Poland, Finland, Sweden is mobilized. This has gone crazy. And so you've got Putin and China in trouble. It worries me because these countries are controlled by people that don't express rational thought in the face of conflict. They don't understand the art of the deal, making compromises, win-win. They don't get it. They don't get that at all. And this attitude is leading to the demise, but will they enter into a lose-lose mentality? Well, if we can't get what we want as our communist countries, we're going to destroy your country as much as possible. And I fear this is where we are headed. And we're worried about Stephen Colbert going off the air. This got on network news, all 12 people on network news. I could gather up more protesters in 5 minutes in my neighborhood than these people just did in the largest city in the country. This makes no sense whatsoever. And I'm tired of the non-issues. I'm really tired of the non-issues. And I'm going to close with one other point. I made this point yesterday, but it's even more exacerbated today given the facts. The media is going nuts. The New York Times says Pam Bondi told Trump, "You're on the Epstein list." Well, can someone please tell me, did they put a listening device in and heard Bondi tell Trump that? No, they didn't. Is Trump on the Epstein list? I have no idea. I'm not taking a side on this. I don't know. But what I do know is the New York Times doesn't know either. They're lying through their teeth. And so are the other news agencies coming out. I guess everyone got to eavesdrop on this, except the American public. That doesn't make any sense either. The Wall Street Journal is reporting it. These agencies are losing their credibility. Here's the question I raised in a previous segment earlier in the week. If it is true, then why didn't the Democrats use this in the last 4 years to discredit Trump and use that as a campaign tool? Why is it just surfacing now? Well, because I would say the left, in the face of the allegations against Obama and friends, majorly need a distraction. And unless you got a better answer than that, I can't think of a more appropriate reason to explain what they are doing. This makes no sense. And here's what's greatly disturbing to me. MAGA, you're not taking any prisoners. And I realize that some of the leftist ideals are so anti-American. They're so anti-constitutional. I get that. But there doesn't seem to be any effort on either side, the left or the right, to say, hey, we are Americans and we can fight about our difference, but at the end of the day, we got to join together. This divisiveness is horrendous for a country. It's one of the five predictors of civil war, as we have covered. And I don't think we're on the edge of a civil war, as a lot of people say, but we have the elements. And something may light the match, get that fuse going, and that scares me. And our country is not being run productively because of this divide. And I see it constantly. If a Democrat misspeaks or says something controversial, Fox News and their friends are just going to go nuts for a week. And the reverse is true on the left every single day. There's never a let up. It's always something that they have to find. Now, with the right, I'll give them credit. They stand for trying to balance the budget, save the dollar, peace through strength with regard to Russia and China. And I am nervous about, are they being successful? Sun Tzu in The Art of War said, leave your enemy a way out. I don't know that we've done that with Putin and China. That scares me. But at least they stand for something that you could come back and say, it's productive for the country. Can someone please tell me what Bernie Sanders and AOC and Ilhan Omar and Mondami and what have these people promoted and done that helps the American people? What I see is a constant sling of insults, conspiracy theories, and that's okay, but are you doing anything substantively to improve the lives of Americans? I think the right could do a lot more, but at least I can identify some goals. With the left, disruption seems to be the only goal. I hold both parties in contempt, but the left is not capable of ruling. And listen to me clearly, this is not your mommy's Democratic Party. There's been a lot of Democrats through the years I've greatly admired. I don't see anything to admire about their leadership right now. We are in a very bad place politically, and we very well, if we can survive long enough to take advantage, need to teach our children how to express frustration, deal with conflict, and work for win-win solutions rather than what we're seeing right now with grown-ups acting like five-year-olds. And quite frankly, I'm sick of it. And someone's going to say, "Well, Dave, what's your answer?" I've said it before. I'll say it again. Somebody with backing and money needs to take out the website called Toss Them All, as in tossthemall.com. And unless you can really see that someone is doing a fantastic job in the halls of Congress and the Senate, they come up in their primary, get them out. You don't have to sacrifice your party affiliation. You can still vote Democrat, you can still vote Republican. But the present cast of characters we have in large numbers, do your research on who's appropriate and not, they need to be gone. We need to make it clear we're not tolerating this juvenile behavior from either side any longer. Will you join me in that? Does anyone want to actually jump into this movement as we move towards the midterm elections? I have brought this up before. I'll give you an example, okay? Republicans, be selfish for a minute. You want the MAGA ideals, you want Trump to have a third term, which is never going to happen, but you go through all these things, you want all these things, fine. Then why do you tolerate someone like Susan Collins, who pretends to be a Republican, or Linda Murkowski from Alaska? Why do you tolerate these kinds of people, the Rhino Republicans, when they're not even true to their own party affiliation? At least for the Democrats, you know where they stand. The rhinos, in my mind, are a lower form of life than the Democrats are, politically speaking. Why do you tolerate that? Why aren't you putting them out in the primary? You don't have to go vote for a Democrat. And I'd say to the Democrats, same thing. Why do you tolerate AOC and her unconstitutional policies of property confiscation, basically supporting, as Ilhan Omar did, the persecution on college campuses of Jewish people? That's unacceptable. And no, I'm not making an excuse for Netanyahu. I'm talking about what's happening here in America. If any of our citizens are not safe, I don't care what their background is, then none of us are safe. And we seem to have forgotten that. We, the people, are to blame now for what is going forward. We have the ability to virtually clean house. Maybe you leave 10% in or 20% in that are eligible for election, the entire House and one third of the Senate. Why are you tolerating this? And here's what people will say. Well, it's just too big a problem, and I'm just one person. I can't have an effect. How does an acorn grow into a redwood? That's what I'll leave you with. I'm Dave Hodges. This is The Common Sense Show, looking for sanity. Sign up for our newsletter. TheCommonSenseShow.com is where you go. You click on the newsletter link, put in your email. No, we don't sell your data. That's unethical, and we don't ever do it here. And you'll get a recapitulation by email of everything we've done in the previous 24 hours. People love it. I get thank you notes on this every day. Over 50,000 people are taking advantage of this, and it's free. It's completely free of charge. And people just love it, and you should too. And I'm just giving you a way to simplify your life. One-stop shopping on the things we do. Hey, we have a lot of work to do. Roll up your sleeves, get involved, and try to be productive, but most of all, be professional. Don't be like some of these morons that we're seeing on TV. Be professional. We'll see you back here next time. God bless everybody.